This morning, we're going to be in the book of Judges. We're going to continue in our series in Judges. We're heading into Judges 6. We're heading into Gideon. We're not going to handle all of Gideon's story today. It's too much to handle in one go. But we are going to start the story of Gideon. And I remember as a kid, this one always bothered me because I don't know if it was just me, but like that story in the book of Exodus where God told his people not to test him. Like, that really stuck out in my mind as a kid. And then I would hear the story of Gideon, where he more than once says, I'm going to test you, God. And it really bothered me. It was like, you know, this, like, now I know that that's something called cognitive dissonance, right? Like, I believed two things that, like, didn't line up. Like, it was like, I don't see how this fits. Whereas when Gideon asked God for a test, God doesn't respond to him the same way that he responds to the Israelites in Exodus. And I think that, I'll go ahead and now, like, give you the little answer of what I think was going on here. And I think it has to do with the fact that, like, Gideon's heart was not one of, like, resisting the Lord in this. Israel's heart in this of, like, why did you bring us here? Just to die? It would be better if at least we had onions and garlic and leeks in Egypt, right? Like, that's what they say. Like, the whole purpose of their interactions with God in Exodus and their interactions with Moses is one of disbelief, one of accusation, one of resistance. And in that, just like you tell your kid when they come up to you with the same thing over and over and over again, when they're acting out, it may not even be the words they say, it may not even be the action they're doing, but you can tell the heart behind it and you say, you're really testing me right now. That's the same heart that the Lord has for his people in Egypt, or as they're coming out of Egypt and as they are constantly pushing back. And I think in Gideon's story, we see a little bit of something different. And so that's where we're going to be diving into this morning, Judges chapter 6. Open up your Bible with me. We're going to go ahead and just read the entire chapter, and then we'll kind of break it down. So, Judges chapter 6. And this is coming after, at least in our story, there's not much of a transition point, but we just came out of Deborah and Barak, right? And there was a big kind of battle, a man who was nervous to step into what the Lord was calling him to do. Deborah steps up with him. They win the battle. The people are kind of like freed, at least in that region for the time. There's another lady who takes a tent stake and drives it into a man's skull. Like, this is a crazy story. And then there's this big celebratory song that happens after that. And it says, the very last verse of chapter 5, at the end, it says, and the land had rest for 40 years. Which is interesting because in the Bible, anytime you see that number 40, it's a time of preparation. Okay? And then we pick up in chapter 6. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord gave them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. And the hand of Midian overpowered Israel, and because of Midian, the people of Israel made for themselves the dens that are in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds. For whenever the Israelites planted crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. They would encamp against them and devour the produce of the land as far as Gaza. And they would leave no sustenance in Israel, no sheep or ox or donkey. For they could come up with their livestock and their tents, and they would come like locusts in numbers. Both they and their camels could not be counted, so that they had laid waste to the land as they came in. And Israel was brought very low because of Midian, and the people of Israel cried out for help to the Lord. When the people of Israel cried out to the Lord on an account of the Midianites, the Lord sent a prophet to the people of Israel, and he said to them, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, I led you up from Egypt and brought you out of the house of slavery. I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of all who oppressed you and drove them out before you and gave you their land. And I said to you, I am the Lord your God. You should not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But you have not obeyed my voice. Now, the angel of the Lord came and sat underneath the terebinth tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite. while his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor." And Gideon said to him, "Please, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonderful deeds that our fathers recounted to us, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord has forsaken us and given us into the hands of Midian." And the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do not I send you?" And he said to him, "Please, Lord, how can I save Israel? Behold, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." And the Lord said to him, "But I will be with you, and you shall strike the Midianites as one man. And he said to him, "I know I have found favor in your eyes, and then show me a sign that it is you who speak to me. Please do not depart from here until I come to you and bring out my present and set it before you." And he said, "I will stay till you return." So Gideon went into his house and prepared a young goat and unleavened cakes from an ephah of flour. The meat he put into a basket and the broth he put into a pot, and he brought them to him underneath the terebinth tree and presented them. And the angel of God said to him, "Take the meat and the unleavened cakes and put them on this rock and pour the broth over them." And as he did so, the angel of the Lord reached out to the tip of his staff that was in his hand, and he touched the meat and the unleavened cakes, and fire sprang up from the rock and consumed the meat and the leavened cakes. And the unleavened cakes. And the angel of the Lord vanished from his sight. Then Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. And Gideon said, "Alas, O Lord God, for now I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." But the Lord said to him, "Peace be to you. Do not fear, you shall not die." And then Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and called it, "The Lord is Peace." And to this day it stands at Ophrah, which belongs to the Abiezrites. That night the Lord said to him, "Take your father's bull and a second bull, 7 years old, and pull down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the Asherah that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of the stronghold there, with stones laid in due order. Then take the second bull and offer it as a burnt offering with wood of the Asherah that you've cut down." So Gideon took 10 men of his servants, and he did as the Lord had told him. But because he was too afraid of his family and the men in town to do it by day, he did it by night. When the men of town rose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was broken down. The Asherah beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar that had been built. And they said to one another, "Who has done this thing?" And after they had searched and inquired, they said, "Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing." And then the men of town said to Joash, "Bring out your son that he may die, for he has broken down the altar of Baal and cut down the Asherah beside it." But Joash said to all who stood against him, "Will you contend for Baal, or will you save him? Whoever contends for him shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because his altar has been broken down." Therefore, on the day Gideon was called Jerubbaal, which is to say, "Let Baal contend against him, because he has broken down his altar." Now, all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and they came and crossed the Jordan and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon, and he sounded the trumpet, and the Abiezrites were called out to follow him. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, and they too were called out to follow him. And he sent his messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they went up to meet them. Then Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, behold, I am laying a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece alone, and if it is dry on the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said." And it was so. When he rose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he wrung enough dew from the fleece to fill a bowl with water. And then Gideon said to God, "Do not let your anger burn against me. Let me speak just once more. Please, let me test just once more with the fleece. Please let it be dry on the fleece and on all the ground that there be dew." And God did so that night, and it was dry on the fleece only, and on all the ground there was dew. Pretty interesting story. It's interesting to me to see how we have like this it seems like for most of these judges so far, there's a real resistance. Resistance is probably a strong word. There's anxiety about doing the thing that the Lord has asked them to do. And it's easy to read these stories and easy to think, like, that's silly. But I feel like I get anxiety when the Lord asks me to do something. And I bet you do too. So I think it's good for us to see these things, and I think it's good for us to learn from these things and to see how God blesses his people when they move through, when they push through that anxiety, when they are willing to listen and to engage. And we see so far from all of them, none of them do it perfectly. If these were stories about just like, you know, these mighty men is a phrase that's used in here. If it was all about the might of Gideon, this would be a different story. But a lot of this story is him being kind of a little bit timid, a little bit anxious, but pushing through and obeying along the way. Here's what I want us to do. I've got some questions we'll go through. I want us to grab some groups, and here's our first question. Verses 1 through 10. What do these verses tell us about the time that Gideon lived in? Does that make sense? So grab some people beside you and look at these verses. What does this tell us about the time that Gideon lived in? Ready, set, go. Okay, guys, let's bring it back. What did we discover or what did we observe about the time that Gideon lived in? Anybody?
So they were being oppressed, and the Midianites were taking all their land, their food, their livestock, and everything. And they were crying out to the Lord, but the Lord sent them a prophet and said, "You guys do it." Even when he had
it. Yeah, it was a time of oppression. It was a time of like powerlessness, right? And it was said, because of your wickedness, this is what's going on. The Lord gave them a message. Hey, like, there's a reason for this. It's not just happenstance, but this is a consequence of your sin. Good. Others? Anybody? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And that's like, it's kind of a counterintuitive thing, but it's also a good thing, right? That even though they were doing what was wicked, they still came to the Lord. Like, I feel like a lot of this passage reminds me of parenting. Like, there are definitely times where my kids are fighting and they come crying up, "Daddy, Daddy, well, he hit me. What happened? Well, I bit him." You're like, "Well, yeah, like, he's going to hit you if you bite him." That's the same kind of thing that's going on here, but it's like on a much more mature and cultural level of, man, there's some great wickedness going on here. Lord, the people are taking us down. Well, like, didn't I tell you, as I gave you the law, that I will bless those who bless you, I will curse those who curse you? Didn't I also tell you that, like, if you follow the laws, then you will have great blessing, your fields will always be full, there will be no drought, your children will grow up, they'll be safe, there'll be peace. But if you don't, there will be judgment, that you'll be struck down, that you'll be driven to the mountains," essentially, is what he tells them. And that's exactly what's happened here, right? They're in the caves. They're in the mountains. They're living with the exact words that God has told them. And to a certain extent, the only option is for them to come to the Lord. And that's exactly what they're doing. And he tells them, hey, this is happening because of your sin. I think it's interesting. Did anybody see how many years was this happening? 7. What do we know about the number 7? It's the number of completion, the number of perfection, right? It's almost as if they, like, the story is hinting at, like, there's something that has had time to grow into its fullness here, whether that be the fullness, the completion of their time of judgment, or maybe the fullness, the completion of their time to realize, oh my goodness, I need the Lord. But there's something about this that is telling us, like, it was a complete thing. There'd been enough time for this to, like, come to its fullness of understanding, and it's time for change. It's something new has to happen here. Good. Other thoughts?
Israelites are learning maybe the last time 20 years before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, last time it was 20 years. This time it's 7. And like some of these stories are regional. Some of these stories are the entire nation, right? Like it could be that they've heard rumors, right? Like Gideon, if I'm fast forwarding a little bit, he talks about like his forefathers. Like he didn't know anything of this. Like he talks about the stories his dad told him. This is not anything that he knows about like the blessing of the Lord really firsthand, or these big miracles that the Lord has done. We end in chapter 5 by saying the lion had rest for 40 years, right? Like, and so all of a sudden, then there's something new. He hadn't seen God's mighty works. He had just seen, like, kind of this breakdown that they were living in at the current time where they were in trouble. They were in trouble. They had to run. They had to hide. Okay, let's move on to the next passage. 11 through 24, another question for you guys. Another question for you guys. And this is when now the angel of the Lord came and they talked to Gideon and the angel of the Lord talked together. What do we notice about their conversation? Look through that passage of verses 11 through 24 together, same groups again, and see what you notice about their conversation. Ready, set, go. Okay, what do we think about this conversation? What do we observe? Chris.
You said there's some patterns to Moses here. Like the Gideon killing disqualifies himself. Then asks for a sign.
Yeah. Almost like when Moses was talking at the burning bush, they're like, "Oh, I'm not good at talking." And here he is. We're the weaklings. Like I don't have anything to offer. Yeah. So there's definitely a level of like doubt or of backing down, of disbelief. Surely someone else is better fit. What else did we see? Seeds of doubt of God did that then, but like, are you sure he'll do it now? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that we do as well, right? Like we hear all these stories of the Bible and we believe them, but then like we are entering in today and we're like, oh, well, what are we going to do? You know, you just kind of like go right along. Like you forget that the same Lord who did these crazy mighty wonders, who gave his people dramatic victory, defeated things that were impossible to defeat. He's still here today. He's still the same character. He's still building his same kingdom. Yeah. I love that point. I think that that's a pretty intense one. There is a, like, if you look at it, like, in there where it keeps saying Lord and the Lord, my Lord, the Lord, like, most Bibles will have those capitals different as far as, like, what letters are capitalized. And it's pretty obvious to us. The narrator is telling us he is speaking to God, and God is speaking to him. And if you look at it, he's, like, the whole time, he's just, like, kind of being polite. Oh, my Lord. You know, like, this is, he doesn't think that this is God. He thinks this is some weird, maybe it's a weird prophet. Maybe it's some guy from across the town who like knows some of his country's history. Who knows? But he's treating him with respect, but he doesn't think this is God until he disappears. Uh-oh. What's his response when it disappears? I'm going to die. That's what he thinks is going on. And it's not until the Lord comes to him and says, you're not going to die. Like, it is a pretty cool thing. I think that a lot of theologians will call this what they call a theophany, right? It's the physical presence of the Lord interacting with people. That's Moses in the burning bush, to Chris's point. That is Abraham, you know, entertaining the visitors, and they say, oh, you're going to have a baby. And they, oh, no, surely not, please. Like, this is something that happens where the Lord shows up, his physical presence. I mean, technically, the cloud of smoke and the burning cloud of, or the burning pillar, like, that's a theophany. That's the Lord's presence actively visible, dwelling with the people. Like, can you imagine just going about your time, like, threshing in a wine pit, right? Like, that's the picture. I don't know if you guys are familiar with, like, what the structure is that he's in. But he's hiding because he thinks that, and with good reason, he thinks that he's going to, all his stuff is going to get taken. He'll probably get killed. And so imagine like a gazebo, right? Like this kind of like, not really a, like it's not truly a shelter, but it's like, there's kind of probably some structure to it, a little bit of a roof, maybe like a little railing. And then there's a big pit. And normally when you thresh wheat, you need to be out in the wind and throwing it up so that the chaff gets floated away, right? He's down in this pit, hunkered down. It's almost like imagine a gazebo with like an in-ground pool next to it. He's in the in-ground pool doing this. So like he's sheltered from the wind. He's hiding. He's just trying to get the job done the best he can and not lose all his food and not get killed. And here all of a sudden, I don't know, maybe he pops up to take a water break. And like there he sees this guy over by the tree. And the guy starts telling him, oh, mighty man of valor. Yes, like me, the man hiding in the pit. I'm the mighty man of valor. And God's going to do something in you. And this whole time, this back and forth, he's speaking to the Lord and has no idea. Until, one thing I do love is like, he doesn't just hear this guy and think he's crazy. That would be my inclination, to hear this guy and think he's crazy. I'm here I am hiding. Our nation's in shambles. He thinks that God's going to use me, the guy hiding in the pit. But he's talking to him, and what does he do? He kind of like, okay, like, well, that could be cool. Hold on, let me go get some food. Let me give you honor. Let me give you a place to talk. He doesn't run away from it completely, even though he's intimidated by it, even though he's not sure that he truly, like, wants to take this and act on it, he's willing to engage with it. So he goes back, gets some meat, gets some broth, gets some bread, and he comes back, and it says, poof, goes up in flames, right? And then he goes, whoa, that was different than what I thought. Like, I'm sure he thought, like, oh, we would eat it, and maybe the guy would be like, you know, oh, you got the goat for me? Thanks. It was really delicious. Like, God will bless you because you're being kind to me. No, no, no. He touches it, goes up in smoke. The guy disappears. Uh-oh. Like, I would be completely beside myself. I would think that I must have had a dream, that I must have fallen asleep, must have had a heat stroke when I was out there threshing. But that's not what he does. That night, the Lord said to him, take your father's bull. Wait, yeah, I'm picking it up in the right place. That night, the Lord said to him, take your father's bull and the second bull, 7 years old, and pull down the altar of Baal. All right, so you're going to do something. Here's your actual instructions. That'd be crazy. Like, thinking like, okay, I had an interaction with God, and then that very night, another interaction with God. And this one, no way to misinterpret it. Here it is. Take the bulls, tear down the altar of Baal that your father has cut down, and cut down your Asherah pole next to it. Build an altar to the Lord your God on top of the stronghold there, with stones laid in due order, and then take the second bull and offer it as a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah that you've cut down. So Gideon took 10 men of his servants, and he did as the Lord told him. But because he was too afraid of his family and the men in town to do this by day, he did it by night. And when the men of town rose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was broken down, and the Asherah beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar that had been built. And they said to one another, who has done this thing? And after they searched, they inquired, and they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing. And then the men of town said to Joash, bring out your son that he may die. for he has broken down the altar of Baal and cut down the Asherah beside it. But Joash said to all who stood against him, will you contend for Baal, or will you save him? Whoever contends for him shall be put to death by mourning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because his altar has been broken down. Therefore, on that day, Gideon was called Jerubbaal, which is to say, let Baal contend for himself, or Baal contend against him, because he broke down his altar. When we see this part, if you go to the next slide, this is the mighty man of valor, which is like kind of silly, kind of tongue-in-cheek, the man who was hiding, the man who is scared of his family and scared of his people. And so he does it at nighttime with 10 of his buddies. It would be easy to like almost see this as mockery, to like, oh, you mighty man of valor. But I don't think the Lord mocks, right? I think to a certain extent, the Lord will tell us things that we aren't yet because he intends to make us them. Right? Like when we are counted as a righteous, like holy priesthood, it's not because of our holiness. It's because of the Lord's holiness that has been applied to us. Right? The prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Well, it's not because of your righteousness. It's because the Lord's righteousness has been applied to you. And that's exactly, I think, what's going on here is the Lord had already hinted to him, you will be a mighty man of valor. Because that's what I have made you to be. Yes, you. The guy hunkering down right now. Yes, you, the guy who is willing to do what I said, but only at nighttime if no one sees you. Like, there's something about this that, like, begins to stir within him, that begins to get him to be bold, that begins to get him to obey. And he goes and he does it. Almost like, it makes me think of Barak and Deborah, right? Like, he's willing to do it, but only if Deborah holds his hand. Like, you're just kind of taking these beginning steps, and that's exactly what it seems like is going on here with Gideon. I'm going to take these beginning steps, and I'm going to obey the Lord when no one's looking with 10 of my friends, and maybe we can blame it on somebody else, like that we obeyed the Lord. Maybe that'll be, I think it was some sort of like punks, you know, doing some nighttime shenanigans. But he goes, and he does it, and he tears it down, and he sacrifices the bull, and he makes the altar. And that is the beginning of being a mighty man of valor, of taking the little steps to obey, even when it seems like it would be really difficult. You better believe that it's his own dad's stuff. It's his own people who are worshiping. It's the gods of the people who are oppressing them that he's tearing down. So even though he's doing it at nighttime, even though he's nervous about it, this is the beginning of valor. It's the beginning of obedience that, like, lets the Lord prove true what he is saying is going to come true. Not just about him, but about their nation. So I want us to continue on. I think it's really cool his dad's response. Like, it's almost like the dad, like, believes in both gods. Right, believes in Baal and believes in Jehovah. And he says, oh, well, I mean, I guess we gotta let Baal fight for himself. He obviously didn't win this time. If you want to be on his side, go for it. I'm not going to. Like, you even begin to see his tiny little steps of obedience, his tiny little steps of valor change his dad's mind, change his dad's heart. And then he calls out and they start gathering all these people around, and that's where we're going to pick up. So in verses 33 through 40, this is going to be our last little thing. I want to ask you guys to look at that. And I want you to look at the results of Gideon's like kind of like beginnings of obedience. And what do you think about the test that he does with the wool, the famous test where he throws the wool out? So look at his obedience and then look at the test that he gives to the Lord and see what you think about that. Ready, set, go. Okay, what do you think about Gideon's test? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's interesting. The Lord is very patient, right? Like, we don't get a hint of, it doesn't seem like, we don't get a hint of irritation from the Lord on this. And he's willing to go through and show him again. Look, I know I came through last time. Let me prove it again this time. Let me prove it again this time. Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The transition that's happened, right? He went from hiding, cowering, being afraid, feeling like the lowest of the low, to all of a sudden he's like calling together like multiple tribes and all like amassing an army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a huge part, right? Like, he did. He, like, the clothing of the Spirit, like, and he, all of a sudden, he's not hiding anymore. He's blowing horns. He's calling people together. That can't be hidden, right? And it does. It almost feels like he's like, okay, like, let me make sure I understand what I was supposed to do. Like, you said that we'd all attack as one man and that you would use me. Okay, well, you used me. We're all here like one man, but, like, what's next? Let me make sure I'm not just moving out and, like, I got to hold on here and make sure. And I think that, like, there's a distinct difference in his heart posture in that than there is with, like, you know, the Israelites of, like, you should have just left us there. It'd be better if we were dead. Like, this is self-doubt rather than the doubt of the Lord, it seems like to me. Right? Kinsey, I saw your hand. Yeah. I almost feel like to that end a little bit, I almost feel like that's why Gideon uses the word, let me test you again. Like he's almost saying, this would be annoying to me. But, like, just bear with me here. I'm trying to make sure, like, I want to make sure that this is going to have your blessing. Like, it feels like, rather than the testing of the Lord that you read about, that we read about early on with the kids of, like resisting what God is trying to do and doubting his capabilities and doubting his goodness, this seems to be more of a, like we see this all over the scriptures and we don't really think about it very much. Like, Abraham, what happened when Sodom and Gomorrah were going to be destroyed? Oh, God, if there's 50 people. Okay, what if there's 40 people? Okay, what if there's 25 people? Okay, what if there, and like, God is just like, yeah, I'll spare it for... I think he ends with, I'll spare it for five righteous people, right? And then we see Jesus like, oh, Lord, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me, right? Like, we see these things like, think of Paul. Like, he asked, like, Lord, he asked three times for his thorn in his side to be removed, right? Like, this like, kind of pleading with the Lord of, like, is there a different way? Like, what can I do? But these all come from a different stance rather than one of resistance. So I think that, like, as we are going through this passage, I remember always as a child, especially, like, always thinking, like, well, Gideon really got away with something. Like, and I don't think that's necessarily what this passage is here to tell us. I think it's here to show us that the Lord, like, he wants to interact with you, and he is patient with you, especially if you are open to his leading. Right? Like, he is a God who is patient and long-suffering and not willing that any should perish. And here he is with Gideon being patient, and he's patient with you too. I think someone else said it out here, but like, there's lots of times where I think the Lord is asking me to do something and I'm just like, oh no. And sometimes that oh no is like, I just don't want any part of that. So inconvenient. And sometimes that oh no is like, I would love for that to happen, but I don't know how that happens. And I think as long as we're not the first one, like, that's when the Lord is like, oh, don't test me. Why are you doubting my goodness? Why are you doubting my promises? But the second one of, like, help my unbelief, of Lord, I know they're wicked. I know they'd be destroyed. I think of Abraham, right? But, like, what about the righteous ones? Like, the Jesus asking that this cup would pass from him. Is there any other way that this can be done? When your heart is for what the Lord is asking you to do, even if you just don't understand it, he's patient with you. He's kind with you. He comes through for you. Even when we, like, take this faltering steps of, like, I'll do it at night when no one's looking. Like that's a beginning. That's something. That's obedience. It lays the groundwork for something more to be built upon. He is patient to complete what he does in you. Jeremy, I saw your hand.
Mm-hmm. And, like, let the spirit of prophets be subject to the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before we're going to come out and say, thus saith the Lord, you know, like, if you think about what Gideon's saying to all these people he's bringing together, like, the Lord telling us to do this.
Yeah.
So, like, before we say that with boldness and act on it, better test it and better make sure that it really is the Lord's teaching.
Yeah. It reminds me of the beginning of chapter 4. Of Barak and Deborah. Once again, like, that's what happened in that situation, right? Hey, didn't God tell you? Hey, come on. Like, this is like, we thought about it. We agree about it. We know that it lines up with what God has asked us to do in the past. We know that he has blessed other people who has done this. Let's take steps in it, right? Like, it's not just a fling it out there and see what happens. Yeah. I think that's interesting. I would not have, I did grow up on a farm, but I would not have known that the wool, like, dries out naturally on its own. Like, that's something you have to read, for me, I would have to read about that, right? Like, but that's something that, like, he would have known. And, like, that's something I think a lot of times, like, when we are looking for the Lord's leading, I think it's important that we make sure that it lines up with, like, not just what we're hoping happens. It's a good point. It's not just something that we are, like, that naturally happens. So, like, because the Lord does things in a natural way, but he also does them in a supernatural way. And, like, when he is asking you to do something drastic, when it seems like there's a lot on the line, I think it's good for us to confirm, right? Like, there's wisdom in many counselors. And there is a, like, God is not a novice when it comes to communicating with his people. Right? That doesn't mean we always understand it quickly. But it does mean that he is willing to make himself clear. So, we need to sit sometimes on it. We need to wait on sometimes. But I think that, like, the important thing, what I really want to kind of drive home for us this morning is not that we are waiting because of, strictly because of anxiety. We're not waiting strictly because of our unwillingness to move forward with it. That we are, to use the words of Gideon, that we are testing the Lord because we want his clarity. And we want to do what is good. We don't want to do our own thing. And that heart stance is dramatically different than what I grew up thinking of in this passage and what we see in Exodus when the people are like, oh. And the Lord says, you're testing me. And it's just like our children, right? I'm willing to be very patient with my children if they're not doubting my goodness. If they're asking what's for dinner a million times in such a manner that, like, have I ever not fed you? Like, you will be fed. It will be okay, right? Like, but if they are just like, what's for dinner? Like, that's a whole different animal than we never eat around here. Like, and that's like, that's what, like, you know, stirs up the, like, the resentment and the wrath in me of, like, they're doubting my goodness. And frankly, as in the words of Jesus, if you who are evil know how to give good gifts, yeah, sometimes they should doubt my goodness. But the Lord is a different thing than that. The Lord has no badness in him. It's all goodness. So trust him. And it's okay to ask him for clarity. But it's not okay to resist him. It's not okay to drag your feet when you know what you're supposed to be doing. And I think Gideon's a really pertinent example for us, because sometimes we just think that, like, any question is a bad question. Any waiting is a bad waiting. And that's not true. David, think about how much in the Psalms, like, how much does he call out to the Lord? Why, O Lord, do you do this? And it's not because he trusted the goodness, it's not because he resisted the goodness of the Lord. He just didn't understand. And we see God over and over prove his goodness. And not only that, he proves his patience with his people when we are truly wrestling with him. I'm going to ask the band to come. I'm going to pray, and we'll close it down for the day.